Good morning, everybody. It is October 26, 2021. 5 days away from Halloween. Kids are going into schools in their costumes and their Spirit Week outfits. Got the Cruella De Vil costume going on in our house. And of course, the leaves are coming off the trees. We still have some leaves in the Adirondacks, which is extremely late for us to still have leaves on the trees. Speaking of vegetation, that's our topic here today, or rather, poetry in the journal Bad Lilies, which has a floral theme going throughout it. And kind of wonder about a floral theme here in the fall. That's a little bit going against nature, against the grain, perhaps Arabour, like J.K. Heisman's in that golden book from the 19th century. Pretty decadent book. And are we seeing the same decadence in this issue of Bad Lilies? Well, no. It's a great issue. Loved it. Absolutely adored so many of the poems in here, and I can't wait to get into them. But I could have stood with a little bit more decadence from a few of these poems in here. Some of these lilies are a little bit too shy. Maybe wallflowers. Would have loved to see them come out and go for a dance. But for the most part, so many great poems from so many great poets in this issue. We're talking about issue 4 of Bad Lilies. We're going to dig into it right away here. Let me say that just like when I go to the Botanical Gardens up in Montreal, I'm not going there to see the gardeners, right? I'm not going there to learn about the gardener's history. And this gardener grew up in Quebec City, or this gardener grew up in Ottawa, or anything like that. It's about the flowers. It's about the plants. That's what I'm there for. I'm not there to study the gardeners. I'm not there to listen to groundskeeper Willie's brogue, as enchanting as that may be. No, I go for the flowers. Same thing here with Bad Lilies. This isn't about the poets. It's about the poems. So don't bring in your hedge clippers. Don't bring in your earbuds. We're just going for the poems. So, the first poem in Bad Lilies, placed right here at the head of issue 4, is Self-Portrait as Virgin by V. Penelope Shuttle. This is a perfect poem for the start of this issue and a perfect placement for it right here at the beginning. It's perfect because it's a poem about motherhood, and as we'll see at the close of this issue of Bad Lilies, you also have another poem about motherhood. And indeed, that theme runs throughout, like the theme, the floral theme, and like the exploration of the relationship between people and technology. All of those themes are present in this poem. It's a delightful little self-empowerment piece. It goes so far in the second stanza here as to compare the speaker to Mother Mary. Right? She becomes a virgin mother. I will read this to you. How curious to enjoy the arcane knowledge that despite being a mother, I am for a second time a virgin. Love all the R's in there. Curious, arcane, mother, virgin. That sort of growling animalistic undertone that provides a nice counterpoint to the main thrust of the poem. It's delightful. And it also makes the internet, right? This poem also makes the internet, and by extension the poem itself, a magical place. The internet holds the arcane knowledge, kind of like the womb holding the arcane secret of life. There are hothouses everywhere in this issue of Bad Lilies. Let's go on to another poem by Penelope Shuttle, Devotions. And in Devotions, we have this fantastic line, Reason's middle name is Reason. Now that immediately puts you in mind, right, of Josephine Miles' poem, Reason. and how it ends up with its famous line, "Reason, reason is my middle name." That final line of Miles's poem, of course, sort of betraying the speaker. An unreliable narrator is the speaker in Miles's poem, because he hasn't really been reasonable at all throughout that entire poem. And in Devotions, we're seeing reason itself not being reasonable at all. Cause and effect here in Devotions seem to loosen. Time begins to fray. There is this wonderful phrase, "Uncanny embroiderers." I'll actually read these two lines here. "Uncanny embroiderers work with the loose threads of time." So that is a fantastic example of how things are loosening up. Reason is becoming unreasonable, a little bit less reasonable, no less insistent though. And you have the sun transforms to a giant cat, and the sun in its inevitable path over the earth, just as inevitable as irrationality is inevitable, just as inevitable as reason being unreasonable is inevitable. Great counterpoint, by the way, to or accompanying note even to Steven Pinker's recent book, Rationality, and the idea of irrationality and when it is rational to be irrational seems like a paradox. So you have this sort of fever dream of the sun, a leopard, and the sun is wilder than lions, but it still makes its way across the sky. The sun rises on the flowers and indeed lights them up. And let's continue on now through the other lilies. We're going to look at some of the other poems in a lot more detail here, but I just wanted to make sure we cover the start of the book, because it does set up the themes of motherhood, of nature versus artifice, of the relationship between man and technology that we will see coming up in the other poems. So next, let's choose this poem to look at. Let's choose Karwinski's Fleabane from LQ. I am sorry if I am pronouncing your name wrong, but it is K-I-E-W. LQ, like the city, Ukraine, home of the other Hagia Sophia. Perhaps it is. So instead of an invocation like those beginning shuttle poems were, Karwinski's Fleabane, this starts off right off as a fight poem. There are adversaries here, the addressee and the speaker. The first 10 lines of this poem have 11 I's or you's or me's in them, and they're on opposite sides of the argument, right? This poem is all about I versus you. And the conceit here in this poem is that the speaker is the fleabane, right? The daisy-looking plant. And the addressee is the gardener, who at first tolerates, welcomes the fleabane into the cracks in his pavement and the edges of his yard, but then decides that he needs to root out this flower. And the flower, of course, is placed in a little bit of an adversarial relationship because of that attitude. But the flower still manages to forgive the gardener, and the flower still manages to focus on what is positive in the flower's life. And in the final stanza, you see, "I know you're busy. Thank you for not committing enough effort to root me out." Wow, right? That's pretty generous of the flower to be praising in the gardener his laziness and to be thankful for his laziness. Kind of an interesting insight, right? Perhaps we should all be a little bit more thankful for other people's laziness, because if other people are as likely to do harm as they are to help us, then laziness is transformed from a vice into a virtue. The other thing to notice just from a craftsmanship point of view here in the last stanza is that the yous are gone, right? In the opening stanza, we had all of the I's and the yous, adversarially juxtaposed or adversarially confronting each other. But in the final stanza, the you is there twice in the first line, and then it disappears, and it's all about I. The flower has learned to focus on itself. It's all about itself. And it says, you go off and do your thing. You're busy. Thank you. And then the gardener, the you there, disappears. And from there on, it's all about the flower. My petals uncurl. I'm settled and my seedlings sprawl out. I love seaside small cracks. I hate hard winters. A nice progression there. And of course, it follows, you know, the theme, obviously the floral theme, but also the theme of motherhood, right? The theme of the child coming after the mother, or the flower coming after the gardener, and raising a new life in this strange world. Even raising a new life lit up, illuminated by the internet, or perhaps the internet is illuminated by our lives. Never forget, people, never forget, the internet is just terraforming for artificial intelligence. It is coming. So let's go on to now the next poems we could look at. Well, there's some super poems here by A.E. Stallings, Alicia Stallings. I did just talk about A.E. Stallings' poem Peacocks in LRB. So I am going to zoom right past the Stallings poems. Although they are great, they are super. Let's move right on to the next most formal poems in this issue of Bad Lilies, issue 4. And those would be from Amit Majmudar. And I am once again sorry if I am butchering your name. But Majmudar provides an excellent bouquet right here. And the first poem in this bouquet is Poem That Almost Rhymed. Here's the first couplet. This poem is in couplets, which is quite significant. The first couplet is, sometimes I visit bodies where I almost roamed, and the curves are made of clouds I almost dreamed. Well, something about a couplet that almost rhymes that makes it almost not quite a couplet, isn't there? Almost not quite a couple. Well, let's start off, though, first noticing that this is similar to Self-Portrait as Virgin that started off the collection, because it is juxtaposing artificial and natural, right? In the next couplet, you have a consummation missed by just a touch, an air-to-air refueling broken off. It does not get too much more artificial versus natural than this image of comparing lovemaking to an air-to-air refueling that was broken off. That is a great image. I do not think that I will ever go read a Tyler Rogaway article on the war zone over at thedrive.com again about modern aviation and F-18s and tankers. I don't think I will ever read such an article again, especially if it's accompanied by pictures of air-to-air refuelings, without thinking of this poem. That is a winner there. Kudos to you, Dr. Majmudar. And then let's continue here. The next line, you have the hose retracted and the thirst abandoned as both planes bank in opposite directions. Again, comparing people to machines. So this theme, these lilies on the internet, is going to be carried throughout this book. And that's great. It allows us to look at the idea of nature versus the internet very carefully from a bunch of different viewpoints. I find it fascinating, for example, living up here in the middle of a 6 million acre state park. That Adirondack State Park, of course, is bigger than Yosemite and Glacier and Big Bend and Yellowstone combined, right? This is a huge national park. People forget how big the Adirondacks is. And I live up here in the middle of nowhere, an hour to Walmart, hour to the nearest Texas Roadhouse. Oh, normally I don't mind it, but when I need a Texas Roadhouse visit and it's an hour and a half away, oof, that is unfortunate. But yeah, I live up here and people come up here on vacation all the time and they're downtown and you see them and you talk to them, or they're on one of the beaches or they're out on the trail and you talk to them and they say, I hate those big box stores. I hate traffic. I love mountains. I love lakes. I love nature. And yet they never move here. The population of the North Country has been going down, down, down. Our school enrollment has been decreasing 5% every year on average for the past 25 years, since before the year 2000. So what to make of such hypocrisy? Is it hypocrisy? Is it self-delusion? I'm not sure, but this issue of nature versus artifice is paramount in our society today. So I love the fact that volume 4 here of Bad Lilies is all about nature versus the artificial. Next, you see this poem is an iambic pentameter, right? Why? Well, because it's all about the form. It's all about restraint. It's all about elegance. And it's about fidelity. It's about a trust that is almost broken, but not quite, right? And then this brings up the question, how good are the almost rhymes? Notice the wickedness of this poem. Here's the wickedness of this poem. How good are the almost rhymes? They're pretty close to rhymes, right? Let me read another one here. I hold my almosts in a contact list of hands I never held and never lost. So, right, there's the obvious play on contact there with hands you never held. And is the contact on the internet worth the contact of hand to hand? Maybe, maybe not. But then it's list and it's lost. That is awfully close to a rhyme. In fact, I love formless poetry. I love rhyme. I consider list and lost 99% as good as a rhyme, or as good as a rhyme, to be honest. It's great. I that scratches my rhyme itch. It's good enough to be a rhyme. But notice how wicked that is, because as you're thinking about that, as you realize that, oh yeah, that's good enough. It's almost a rhyme. It's good enough. I love it. It's perfect. It accomplishes the same thing. It pleases my ear. It's like a rhyme. It's good enough. And then you realize, ooh, wait a second. This poem is about almost cheating. Almost being unfaithful to your wife and to your family. So if almost rhyme is good enough, is almost faithless equivalent to being faithless? Wow, right? Mindblown.gif. Really, if these rhymes are good enough and close enough, then is this almost cheating, this wistful longing, looking back on pasts that almost were but were not, is that basically the same as cheating, right? You go to Matthew 5, 27, 28, a biblical overtones, right? You started this issue with Mother Mary, and now you've got biblical overtones here, Matthew 5, 27, 28. If you've looked on a woman with lust, then you've committed adultery in your mind. So is this tantamount to adultery? This is tough, right? This is a tough one, hard to see. It reminds you of Oscar Wilde in a sense, right? What's going to happen? Are we going to sacrifice aesthetics to ethics, or vice versa? Are these lilies here, are they going to fade out like Dorian's picture, like Oscar Wilde caving to Christian ethics at the end of the book there? Or are we really going to get some bad lilies? I want some bad lilies. I'm not going to lie. I want these bad lilies. But are they going to fade out like Dorian at the end? Well, let's look. You go on here through Majmudar's excellent poem. The acorns have little lids on ache. Great way to look at an acorn right there. But then in the next line, you've got the almost, they're boarding an ark one by one, another biblical reference there, while the speaker stays behind with his family of five. And of course, as I said, the poem is rhymed in couplets to emphasize the coupling, that almost, but doesn't quite, happen. So, in summary here, and to figure out our answer to our Oscar Wilde-type puzzle, which one's going to win, ethics or aesthetics, well, you have the couplets rejected, and the never was's are sailing away, and that only one by one, and that only leaves us with the five, the family. Huh, yeah. So the couplings went away, the one by ones went away, you only have the five left behind. Yeah, that's pretty traditionally a good Lily. There is that wickedness that makes you think of the near rhymes being as good as rhymes, and therefore is the near cheating as good as cheating or as bad as cheating. But in the end, we're back with the five, the family, as opposed to coupling or the one by ones. And that's pretty traditional. That's a good Lily. Not much of a bad Lily here. This is kind of, you know, this is like your Lily wearing a Hot Topic leather jacket. You know, like, nice try at being bad, but I see you. I see you in your nuclear family. I see you in your not cheating. Pretty much just like Oscar Wilde here, of course, minus the whole nuclear family, and let's hope the tragic ending. Next from Majmudar, we have Him to Who. This is a nice comment, right, on the feminization of Western culture, at least in the subtext of the title, because him is H-Y-M-N, but of course it's a homonym with him. And in our modern feminized culture, him has become a who, right? Him has become a who. And it's rejecting. This poem is rejecting that. It's rejecting traditions like grammar, right? Or else it would be him to whom in the title. So we're starting off with a couple of rejections right there. And then the poem, it's excellent. It continues the issues theme of juxtaposing. Great job by the editor here selecting these poems for this constant recurring motif here. You've got nature, you've got technology, the eggs of gold, mining operations going on in the mind. The zygotes are ingots, right? That's very natural, biological, with what is refined, what is manufactured. The zygotes are ingots. The egg is a chariot. The egg is also a bomb of becoming. That's a good phrase. I like it, bomb of becoming. And the poem explicitly asks, who made it? It answers him, going back to the question of man's place in this feminine world, right? And it ends up with who, like the owl, the primal force of nature, again, animalistic, like we heard before, and suggesting that maybe it's just primordial more than it is male or female. Maybe this poem is a process, just like thinking about these issues is a process going back to the start before the zygote has differentiated. And maybe the seeds, right, you think of, and St. Vincent Millay, even in the moment of our earliest kiss, set the seed of most unwanted this. And so the seed here of gender may be present in the zygote, but this poem is a journey back to the sperm and the egg, excuse me, before they have been differentiated. It's back to the roots of sound. And in the very last lines, you see that it's just sound. It's just who. There are no answers. There are no identifications. There are no gender. It's not him. It's not the feminine. It's just who. It's just sound. So very clever poem there. Very clever. All right. Let's keep going now through journeying through our Bad Lilies issue. We're going to jump ahead now, and we're going to look at how the volume winds up. This is the poem Closures by Naush Sabah. Sorry if that's not how Naush Sabah pronounces their name. So let's look. This poem Closures, this is a great poem again, and it's a mother poem, just like at the start of the collection. We had a mother poem and Self-Portrait is Virgin. Now we're into Closures at the end. So let's look at the structure of Closures, because it tells us exactly what it's about. It's an acrostic, right? The first letter of every line here is the alphabet. Why is this so appropriate? Well, because the alphabet is not a chronologically ordered phenomenon. The alphabet is, you know, the Z exists at the same point in time as the A. And just like in this poem, it says, I quote, "How have we come here into this future past?" Well, that's one of the themes of this book, of this collection of poems, is the timelessness and the relationship between the child and the man. You think of Wordsworth, the child is father to the man, or the child is father to the mother, perhaps in our current culture is a better way to put it. So by ordering her poem, by structuring her poem, or his, I don't know, their poem, I guess I should say, Saba, by structuring their poem with the alphabet, Saba is taking it outside of time. And the alphabet just exists. It doesn't, it's like one of those sentences in that movie Arrival or Story of Your Life, which is based on some flawed physics, by the way. I think Ted Chiang did not understand the principle of least time when he wrote that. But he does nonetheless pose a very interesting idea, which is that a sentence that is written all at once. You don't write the end of the sentence before you write the beginning of the sentence. And that's the same sense that you get with this poem. The end of the poem is not written before the start or after the start of the poem. It is just an alphabetical poem that all exists in one single moment of time. So that's the structure of the poem. And what is the poem about? What's the content here? Well, it's the mother theme again, and it is the mother with her child. And it's just a single instant of the mother with her child nursing on the bed. Everything is warm. Everything is feathery. Everything is gentle and light. It's just such a happy way to end this book, Our Milky Hours, as it says. And when you look at these bad lilies, you'll see that the biology theme, the botany theme, is carried through right here, right? The first line, the A in the first line, is aubergine, and the X is xanthic, the Z is zoetic, the V is vivaria. You've got all of the letters covered here in botanical terms, which just ties everything up nicely, puts everything together, brings it back to the mothering theme. And of course, this bouquet is tied up from beginning to end by mothers and children and the relationship between them and people and the internet, and by extrapolation, artificial intelligence and the relationship between all of them. It's worth thinking about, folks. The internet is just terraforming for artificial intelligence. How long until we are spending a single moment suspended in time nursing our artificially intelligent children on the internet? Or are we doing it already? Artificial intelligence may not take the form that you suspect it will or that you expect it will. Hard to say. But as this last poem says, tell me things we have time for, untethered from the institutions. Well, this is about all we have time for, but keep reading. Go and read the other poems in Bad Lilies, Volume 4, Issue 4, that we didn't have time to discuss today, because they're all excellent also. And do indeed try to read them untethered from the institutions, just as your children need to go out and find their way on their own. Most of the time, a poem is best encountered, not all the time, but most of the time, a poem is best encountered untethered from institutions. Encounter it on your own terms, folks. All right, that's it for today. Don't forget to find me on Twitter, ADK Homeroom. Do not forget to subscribe. Give me some of that feedback. I'm still new in the podcasting biz. Take care, everyone.